Welcome to the Zen Stoic Path. On this episode, I'll be sharing an interview that I did on the Emergent Human podcast with Michael Osterlink. So Michael is a dear friend of mine, and him and I have gone back and forth on being on each other's podcasts. So I wanted to share this episode with you as Michael interviews me about liberation coaching. Now, if you're new to the podcast, liberation coaching is a proprietary blend of different modalities of coaching that myself and my business partners have put together over the last couple years. And this is a modality that we are able to create rapid transformations with people. We're able to complete what some clients deem as a decade's worth of therapy in a day using these proprietary methods. So on this episode, Michael is actually interviewing me on exactly what liberation coaching is and how it can be a path of healing and transformation for the people who experience it. I'm really excited to share this episode with you. Let's get into the show.
Welcome to the Emergent Human, where we explore optimizing health, embodied spirituality, and post-conventional living. I'm Michael Osterlink, a therapist, coach, and educator, and I'm your host. Today's guest is my friend Victor, who is a liberation coach and trainer, a lifelong martial artist, philosophy enthusiast, and goofball among countless other things. He is the founder of Zen Stoic Philosophy, a hybrid philosophy that brings timeless wisdom into the modern age to help create unshakable inner peace. He believes that the path to true lasting fulfillment is to live by serving from an overflowing cup. His vision is to liberate 1 million people from their own emotional debt and to a life of emotional prosperity by the year 2030, so they are able to operate at their highest levels of contribution and fulfillment on a daily basis. Welcome.
So, Victor, tell me about liberation coaching.
Liberation coaching is a proprietary blend of different modalities all woven into a single modality to essentially help somebody liberate themselves from the emotional debt of their past and be able to create a life that is truly aligned with who they are and what they value.
And this is something that you offer.
Yeah. So liberation coaching is something that I offer with my different business partners. So it's me, my partner, Heather, which, you know, you had us on your show together.
Yep.
And then some of our mutual friends, Keith and Ariel Amavi Norris. So the four of us essentially came together, brought the different coaching modalities that we bring to the table. So when I say all these modalities, ultimately what I'm talking about is we bring in a little bit of NLP, a little bit of traditional coaching, Jungian psychology, astrology, body mapping, somatic techniques, human design, and essentially weave everything together so that the person who is practicing liberation coaching or the liberation coach themselves knows how to seamlessly switch from modality to modality depending on what is needed. What we've noticed in our past is, like the four of us in terms of our training, is that every training that we've ever gone to was really good in some areas and then lacked in other areas. So for example, we pull a lot from neuro-linguistic programming or NLP. Now, NLP is fantastic when it comes to being able to help somebody rewrite their personal narrative in their mind, as well as how to, you know, change beliefs, change habits as they occur as a mental process. But it is highly mental. And so it misses some of the other aspects of the healing and transformation journey that a person needs to go through. For instance, being able to really feel one's emotions fully is not a mental process. Yeah. This is a process that happens in the physical body. So NLP can go so far in terms of helping somebody to rewrite some of the programming that they have in their mind, some of the internal processes. And when I say internal processes, I mean, you know, a person's internal subconscious strategies for doing certain habits, like their strategy for procrastination or their strategy for peak performance, right? NLP can really be very powerful and effective there. But when it comes to actually a person processing emotions that maybe they've held on to for decades, that's not just a mental process, right? There is a physical somatic process that needs to occur for that person to fully feel those emotions, because our emotions, they get trapped in our tissues, right? When we don't feel them, when we suppress them, they get trapped in our actual muscle tissue. So we'll have like a pain here or a pain there, and we'll think it's, oh, it's because I worked out too hard. It's like, oh, actually, it's because you haven't felt this one thing that has been there for literal decades. And the example for myself of where I see this is I had chronic back pain for 20 years. And it wasn't until I actually felt the emotions that were behind that that it actually went away. And the emotions that were behind that was I actually felt angry with my own mom for getting sick and for dying when I was seven. Didn't know how to express that as a seven-year-old, so I held it in. And no matter what I did, no matter any amount of physical therapy, massage, yoga, mobility work, nothing would get rid of this back pain. But the moment I actually felt that feeling, it went away. So that's an example of like two modalities coming into one. So I not only felt that feeling, but I also rewrote the narrative of what it meant to me. So this is just an example of how liberation coaching will pull from different schools of thought, much like how Bruce Lee were to practice the martial arts, right? His goal is like what's going to end the fight the quickest and not being locked into a specific style. Like he would talk about how he used the style of no style.
The art of fighting without fighting.
Exactly. The art of fighting without fighting. So liberation coaching is very much like that, very much like a similar mentality to what Bruce Lee brought to the table.
So it makes complete sense when you talk about the cognitive and emotional, how mm-hmm. they fit in nicely. Can you speak about some of the other modalities that come into play? Because, it's one thing, at least my experience, and I'm in the program, so I've had some great experiences in training with you and with Keith and Ariel and Heather. It's one thing for other, let me step back. A lot of people are Johnny One Note. Oh, this modality does everything. NLP or this somatic practice or this transpersonal mm-hmm. practice, whatever. Solves all the human problems, which we know. Mm-hmm. The human dimension is much larger than just one modality. And how these modalities fit together. A lot of places that I've seen seem to like mix and match them together. And you're like, well, that makes no sense. Like mm-hmm. it's like there's no rhyme or reason. But it seems to me, going through your program, there is actually a rhyme or reason. Like there's a way these things fit together. They're not just, I'm just going to pull a little bit of this and a little bit of this and hopefully mix it together and something occurs. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, there's actually a thought out process of mm-hmm. how you can pull these modalities together through the process of helping the person heal, evolve, change mm-hmm. and grow and transform. Can you first of all talk about some of the other modalities that are used? And then if I'm accurate in my assessment, like how do they actually fit together in a larger map or model that you've mm-hmm. system and the human system is embedded in cultural forms and environmental systems, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, for sure. So I think one of the best ways to explain this is to actually share something about Zen Stoic philosophy.
Oh, nice.
Because Zen Stoic philosophy inspired a lot of the weaving from at least my contribution to the system of liberation coaching. And Zen Stoic philosophy is a hybrid philosophy of Zen Buddhism and Stoicism weaved together for the modern age to essentially be the timeless wisdom that creates unshakable inner peace for the person who practices it. Now, Zen Stoic philosophy is based on a framework that are called the intentions and delusions. So this operates on this meta principle that the purpose of our lives, right? The age-old question of like, what is the meaning of life and what's the purpose? Why are we here? And it has the assumption that the answer is to live it. Right. And that's the purpose. And then the free will that we have the dignity of experiencing free will and the ability to choose is where we fill in all the meaning and tell the story of our lives as we live it. So being that the meta purpose of life is to live it, as simple as that is, there are five fundamental experiences that as a human being we do to engage with life. And then on the other end, there's five ways that we disengage with life. So the five fundamental experiences are feeling, thinking, doing, expressing, and being. Did a little weird thing with my hand there. But anyway, I noticed you were looking at it. So the five fundamental experiences of life are feeling, thinking, doing, expressing, and being. So at any one time, we're engaging in life by expressing one of those things or engaging in one of those things. And so the intentions and delusions are essentially a framework that shows us where we are aligning with the direct experience of life by aligning with one of those five experiences or one of those five ways of engaging. And then the delusions are how we disengage from life.
Okay.
So just as an example, we have with the first intention delusion set, we have embrace versus resistance. So embrace is a way of feeling your feelings. Resistance is a way of not feeling. So the content of what somebody is experiencing or doing is not going to indicate what intention or delusion they might be engaged in, but the context of why they're engaging in the way that they're engaging is going to more so give us a clue as to what that person is experiencing from that perspective. So, for example, if I'm feeling a lot of emotions, and instead of really feeling my emotions, I decide to go and work out, or I decide to go and meditate, then what I'm doing in the workout example is I'm doing instead of feeling. Okay. So instead of actually letting myself feel, which is what that experience would call for from having a bunch of emotions come up, I distract myself with doing something. Or maybe I go work on my business and I say like, oh, I'm going to channel this into something productive, and I go and do that. Or maybe I go meditate instead of feel my feelings. I dissociate. I get into the witness, but the emotions are still there. Mm-hmm. They don't go anywhere. So anytime we engage in delusion, what we're doing is we're disengaging from life itself. When we're in intention, we're engaging through one of these experiences. Mm. We're actually being present in the experience of life itself, because life doesn't point to anything except for itself. And so with this example, anytime that we will disengage from one experience and try to substitute it for another, what actually ends up happening is we start to create emotional debt. We start to create limiting beliefs, narratives for ourselves by not actually allowing ourselves to engage in the experience. So the second pair bond with the intentions and delusions is understanding versus control. So understanding is a way of thinking. It's a way of essentially leading with questions to open up one's perspective rather than coming in with statements or preconceived conclusions. So in a moment where somebody is just regurgitating a belief system or a dogma or a story about themselves, an identity about themselves, they're in a state of control. They're trying to control the perception of what they are and how they're expressing themselves, rather than actually thinking and maybe asking a new question of, you know, maybe somebody will say something, a limiting belief of some sort. I think the most common one would be like, I'm not enough. Mm-hmm. Mm. Oftentimes people will say that without actually asking the question. If somebody says I'm not enough, they're not actually engaging in thinking. They're disengaging from thinking. They're not thinking when they're saying something like that. They're just repeating a story or narrative that has perhaps been there for a while. Whereas if they were to ask a question like, is that actually true? Can I absolutely know that I'm not enough? Right? To refer to some of Byron Katie's work, right? Questions. Right. But just asking the question alone sometimes can break us out of the spell, because the question is the way that we think, right? When we ask questions, whereas when we're just making statements, we might just be regurgitating thoughts that are not even ours. And so knowing where we are in this starts to give us indication as to what needs to be done when you're having a liberation coaching session. So for example, oftentimes what that person needs is they don't need a mindset shift or a belief change. They just need to feel their feelings. Or sometimes it's not that they need to feel their feelings, or it's not that they need a mindset shift. They just need to do the thing. Like, just take the action. Yeah, yeah. When we're thinking about
enough navel gazing,
exactly, right? Like a lot of people will want to make one of these things the panacea, the thing that solves everything. So you have the personal development schools of thought that are like, you just got to take massive action. You just got to take action. It's all about taking action. It's all about execution. It's like, sometimes it is, right. Or then you have the other ones that, you know, from like the somatic work, it's like, oh, you just got to like really feel your stuff and like that's it, and like that's going to fix it. Or like breath work, it's like you just need to breathe through it and that'll like solve everything. It's like, sometimes it will solve the thing, and other times you're using one of these experiences to bypass the other. So we're using action instead of feeling, or instead of expressing, we ruminate and we think. And so understanding where a person is at and what the actual issue is going to give us an indication of how to pull in these other modalities.
I love the framework. In a lot of the conversations I have with clients, I talk about ways we learn to distract ourselves. Mm-hmm. But I usually don't include healthy things, in quotes, that we could do that could prove useful in some cases, not so useful in others. It's more like porn, drug, mm-hmm. you know, Netflix, whatever. Not like meditate. Mm-hmm. That's usually like the go-to thing, or to go work out to burn off some of the energy. But so I love the fact, like, no, not necessarily. Like, mm-hmm. meditation could be you trying to escape from your experience. Mm-hmm. Going working out could be you trying to burn off the energy you actually need to feel. Mm-hmm. But this is really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I found it to be very helpful because sometimes I would be feeling something or I wouldn't be taking an action. Maybe I'd be procrastinating on a project. I'm like, I just need to meditate. Or be like, I just need to talk about it with somebody. So I'd use expression instead of doing. Right? Like, so I'd start like, essentially, I call it emotional debt because you're basically living on credit of these other experiences in place of the ones that are being called to in that moment.
So how do you know which one to go to for you at that very moment?
So this is another aspect of liberation coaching that I was going to bring up and share. Okay. So I appreciate the question. It's building a relationship with the unconscious mind. And in liberation coaching, we talk a lot about Jungian psychology. Yeah. And Carl Jung, he would be fascinated with the unconscious mind and do a lot of work with the unconscious mind. Now, I find the best results that clients get is when they build a relationship and a rapport with their unconscious mind, and they can literally ask their unconscious. Oftentimes, we're operating solely in our conscious mind, which is the sliver of our ego that we're identified with that day in that moment. And so whatever identity that is, we're going to think in that way. We're going to think in the lens of whatever that current iteration of ourselves is. And so when we ask the unconscious mind, we go from this very like narrow sliver of viewing reality to this much more expansive view, because the unconscious mind is the storehouse for all of our memories. It runs the body, preserves the body, is connected to all the bodily functions. Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't think about beating my heart throughout the day, or I often don't think about breathing and digesting, right? Like, body does that. So the unconscious mind is what is essentially facilitating all these really key core functions. You don't grow your own hair, do you? Like, you don't think about the process like, I gotta fucking grow this. No, your unconscious mind is doing that.
That's pretty funny.
So it's vastly more intelligent and has a much greater capacity than our conscious mind. Mm. And so when we can build a sense of trust with it, like, it can be a very powerful guide. So when I'm running into challenges, like this just actually happened the other day, I asked my unconscious mind, and said, is what I'm experiencing right now something that I need to feel, or like a feeling that I'm not addressing? My unconscious mind said, no. And I said, okay, is there somewhere where my thinking is limited? Like, do I need to ask a new question of myself? My unconscious mind said, no. I said, okay, is this an action that I need to be taking? Is there like a doing that needs to happen here? And it's like, yes. I said, okay. And then I checked in with the other two. I said, okay, is there anything that I need to express, or any conversations that I haven't had that I need to have right now that are, you know, creating this sensation of this block in my reality?
Okay.
No. Do I need to meditate? Do I need to just sit with this and be still? No. So by asking my unconscious mind, I was able to come to, it's about the action that needs to be taken.
Okay. So how do you teach that? And how does one know it's not their ego pretending to be the unconscious mind versus the unconscious?
That's a great question. So I think one of the ways of doing this, or of understanding this, we teach this exercise during the Liberation Coaching Academy. We call it sovereign awareness. And sovereign awareness is essentially a way of stepping into the perspective of one's unconscious mind by combining a few techniques. So one of those techniques is called the Hakalau. Now, Hakalau is a practice from Hawaiian shamanism called Huna. And essentially what you do is you go into peripheral vision. So you basically just relax the muscles in your eyes and you allow your vision to essentially expand and take in the entire room. When we're fixated on one thing, we often will miss everything else in the environment. So being in the ego ultimately is like this fixation on this identity. So to paraphrase from Michael Singer, the author of The Untethered Soul, he would talk about how when you focus on an object, and an object can be anything, it can be a thought, it can be a feeling, it can be a problem, it could be a drama that's occurring in the world. And if you focus on it for long enough, you develop what's called object consciousness. So what peripheral vision does, when you're in object consciousness, you start to perceive yourself as that object. You start to identify yourself as that thing. So we'll often do that with belief systems, thought patterns, identities within our minds. So when you go into peripheral vision, you essentially melt away that object consciousness and suddenly you're just here and everything is one. You're no longer looking at things in your environment. Like, I'm not looking at a fireplace or a chair. Everything is like one image to me when I'm in peripheral vision. Following that, we also talk about belly breathing, right? Allowing the awareness to come into the body. So belly breathing is a way that will calm our nervous system, regulate ourselves, and bring us into our own bodies. And upon doing that, we can actually start to feel when something is a yes and when something is a no. And so part of sovereign awareness is developing like, okay, well, what are your unconscious signals for yes and no? How do you know? How does your body tell you when something is a yes and a no? And I think what's really key about that, and something I learned recently, is that we have four times as many nerve endings going from the body up into the brain as we do from the brain coming down. So there's far more information coming this way than this way. So I think when we're in ego, we're trying to make the decisions here versus understanding that they're actually coming from the body, which refers to another aspect of liberation coaching where we talk about human design and how people make decisions. So for those who are not familiar with human design, it is it's a modality that takes into account your birth information, kind of like astrology. So it pulls in astrology, pulls in the I Ching, some things from Kabbalah, some Jungian things, and it pulls everything into this system that essentially shows you that what is your optimal way of operating in the world? And like, what's your design? And a lot of people have different ways of making decision based on their human design. And most of their decision-making, or most of what you're going to see in the world with people's, with regard to decision-making, is going to be a bodily feeling. It might be like a gut feeling, or it might be an emotional wave that they need to ride into a place of clarity. So when you ask that question, like, how do I know it's my unconscious mind, or if it's, you know, my ego, it's first a process of bringing yourself into your body and then literally asking, say, unconscious mind, show me a yes. Show me what a yes feels like. Show me what a no feels like. Because one of the biggest challenges of people making decisions is that most of them are making it from their ego, from their conscious mind, because they're disconnected and dissociated from the body. We disconnect and dissociate when we cut off those five experiences and we try to use another.
So requires, it sounds like, a lot of first of all, self-awareness and self-communication, various aspects of self. And talking about the unconscious, since you brought up human design, we can kind of go into the transpersonal dimensions of conscious, the collective unconscious, and non-personal unconscious things too, because I know astrology also plays a role in the system as well. And also there's other things too, like I remember one of the teachings, like if something happens in your environment, it'd be a message that, you know, like doesn't have to be, it's like something happening in your gut or your knee or your ankle. Like literally things can happen in your physical environment that could be signals to the self to wake up to something. So can you speak to some of the transpersonal dimensions of the system?
So it's a great question. I think the premise, or like the overarching premise of all of it, is a theme that we talk about in liberation coaching, which is absolute sovereignty. And absolute sovereignty is essentially taking ownership and responsibility for everything that happens in your life, every choice, both conscious and unconscious. And it's everything. Now, this can be quite an undertaking for people. The way that I like to, one of the quotes that I like to reference for this is from I think it was Marianne Williamson that said, our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate, but that we're powerful beyond measure. Now, when I first heard that, I was like, why would people, like, why wouldn't they want to be powerful? Like, why would they fear that? And I realized over the years that it's because it also requires taking responsibility for everything in order to take your power back, because we give our power away in so many different ways. Right. And oftentimes, the reason why that's such a big undertaking and a tough sell for people is because people typically conflate responsibility and fault. They think, if I'm taking responsibility, then it must be my fault that all these bad things are happening, and then they shame spiral. But fault and responsibility are not the same thing. Fault is a process, or a process of shame, I would say, like a self-shaming, so to speak, is when you take fault. And the example that I always love to give with this is like, if you were throwing a gathering in your home, somebody came over and they knocked over a potted plant and they like made a huge mess all over the ground, and then they left and they didn't clean it up. Is that your fault that that happened? Like, no. but it is your responsibility because it happened in your home.
Okay.
Right? Like, it is your responsibility to clean it up. So, like, while we cannot control what has happened in our lives mm-hmm. consciously, we can control how we respond to it.
Which is a very Stoic approach.
Right. Yeah.
That, wealth in your philosophy.
Yeah. Very, very much aligned with Stoicism. And it's in the same idea as, like, these things that have happened in our lives are not our fault, but they are our responsibility to deal with, especially if they are a problem for us mm-hmm. and we're experiencing any kind of like suffering or challenge because of it. And so with regards to liberation coaching, we talk about this idea of standing in absolute sovereignty, of taking full ownership for all these things, of taking your power back. Because most people, they give their power away in one of three ways, right? They'll typically either give their power away to circumstances. Circumstances could be like your nationality, like what you were born into, like things you just don't consciously control. Could be your race. It could be your socioeconomic status. It could be a current event that's happening in the world. Like, we don't control circumstances, but oftentimes people will give their power away to that. They'll say like, I can't because X circumstance. Mm-hmm. Or people will give their power away by blaming people. Like, I can't be who I want to be because my family said this thing to me, or because my mom needs me to work in our family business, and so I couldn't possibly go and do that thing that is my dream. And the last thing that we blame are our own thoughts. Mm. Falsehoods about the self, right? Like, do we tell ourselves stories that are not true? Like what we were referring to earlier of like the I'm not enough.
Right.
So with regards to like being able to see the environment in a way that starts to clue you into what might be going on internally, one needs to stand in absolute sovereignty, taking ownership of yourself. Because as you start to do that, then you start to experience what we like to call the principle of perception. Principle of perception is essentially that what you're seeing in the world around you. According to the book Flow, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi would talk about how you can process, the human brain can process 126 bits of information per second. But in the modern age, we get hit with 11 million bits of information plus, right, at any one moment. And so it's like me handing you 11 million toothpicks. Like, that's just like unfathomable. But like, you can handle 126, but like 11 million is overwhelming. So when you think about it from that perspective, the question then becomes like, okay, well, how do I actually filter that information mm-hmm. that's coming in? And we filter the information based on what we deem as important. And what we deem as important is dictated by the level of emotional engagement we give any one thing, any belief, value, or attitude. Yeah. Right? So that's how we'll tell ourselves that something is important. When we tell ourselves something is important, triggers the reticular activating system to notice what is familiar and similar mm-hmm. to what we've decided is important internally. So of those 11 million bits that are coming in, we're only going to notice 126. And ultimately, based on what we've said is important, we're going to notice ourselves in everything and everyone, because that filter is completely created by our beliefs, values, and attitudes. So if we come back to this piece on sovereignty, it's like part of liberation coaching is being able to look at what's going on in the environment, things that you're noticing, right? If you notice that, like, in your business, you always deal with the same client mm-hmm. or in a relationship, you keep dating the same person, like the same person in a different body, basically, mm-hmm. or you keep having the same challenges in your professional life or with your kids or with your friends. The fact that it's repeating is typically because it is something that is unconscious within you. And like Carl Jung would say, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will rule your life and you'll walk around calling it fate. So part of what we do in liberation coaching is we allow people to stand in their sovereignty. Mm-hmm. The way the coaching is actually done is through what is called the mirror and the spotlight. Mm-hmm. So liberation coaches are never going to tell you, like, because you have this astrology, this is what it means. It's like, we might use astrology, but we will ask the client, like, what does this mean to you? Like, what does this bring up within you? Because when you ask questions like that, the unconscious mind will immediately tell you what it reminds you of. Right? And this is our process of active imagination. So if we're thinking about it from that perspective of standing in absolute sovereignty, being able to see the environment as this reflection of what's going on internally, then it starts to allow people to actually be empowered to make the changes that they want to make. So yes, we'll use things like human design or astrology, which many people will actually a lot of the population will use those tools as a way of removing their sovereignty. Like, right. I'm a Cancer moon, so I'm going to act this way. It's like, no. You still have sovereignty over these things. The question is asking yourself, and this comes back to that free will piece that we talked about. It's like, what does this mean to me? How does this actually affect me? What is this bringing up within me? And your unconscious mind will always tell you. Mm-hmm. So with liberation coaching, sovereignty, it's about standing in absolute sovereignty. As a liberation coach, we shine a mirror and a spotlight to help somebody see their own stuff and to have the opportunity to choose to step into that sovereignty and claim their freedom.
That's beautiful. And I appreciate you bringing in some of the other modalities. And there's quite a few other modalities, but I think it's less important to talk about some of the other modalities. I think you laid out why it's done, or your framework. Wonderful. So if someone's interested in like, I want to learn to become a liberation coach, what's that process look like?
They can go and check us out at liberationcoachingacademy.com, and you can fill out an application and apply for one of our next trainings.
Which I highly recommend, because I'm certified level 1 and 2, and I'm looking forward to continue the training with you guys. Awesome. Thanks, Victor.
Thank you.